How is it that socialism is becoming so popular in modern America, especially among the young? Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Bill Federer, a returning guest who's a great author and speaker. And he has published a website, continues to publish it, called AmericanMinute.com. His latest book is on the problem and the issue of socialism, and he shows in that book that socialism is not new. And in times past, he and I have discussed this, and we've dealt with Plato and so forth. But Bill, take us up to the 21st century. Why is socialism in modern America, despite its track record of failure everywhere it's been tried, why is it so popular among Americans, especially the young? How do we explain the phenomenon of AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a virtual rock star in American politics? And she's an avowed socialist.
Right. It's the promise of heaven on earth without God. It is the ultimate bait and switch. The same way you have a car salesman, a used car salesman, bait and switch. This is a cultural bait and switch. It promises utopia. It delivers totalitarianism. And let's go back to American Revolution, and then France has a revolution. France's revolution is the beginning of modern-day socialism. And it is liberté, equalité, and fraternité. Fraternité is the French word for socialism. Anyway, Napoleon spreads this around Europe.
Wait. Technically, wouldn't it be brotherhood? Like fraternity, fraternal order, that kind of thing. Brotherhood. But it implied right. in it is socialism.
Right. So the French word fraternité is the word for the collective, the fraternity, the surrendering. And built into their motto is a mutually exclusive phrase, right? Because liberté is experienced individually, yet fraternity is the group. And you have to surrender the individual for the sake of the group. Now, equality can be interpreted two ways. The American way is it's equality before the law and equal opportunity. But the other way is everybody owning an equal amount of stuff. And when the collective thinks that you have more stuff than you deserve, the collective can take it away from you. And so you have no rights to your property. Now, this fraternity concept was installed through a violent, bloody revolution of killing off the old order. So every socialist experiment since then is this violent killing off of the old order to bring about a new promised utopia. Let's skip to Germany. Now, Germany wasn't Germany. It was a bunch of kingdoms, Prussia, Bavaria, Saxony. And when Napoleon conquered them really easily, the king of Prussia said, we need to strengthen the state. So he gets a philosopher named Hegel, who taught at the University of Berlin. And Hegel says the state is God walking on earth. The state is our mortal God, all the worth that a human being he possesses through the state, the collective, the fraternity, right? And so who was a member of the radical student group at the University of Berlin called the Young Hegelians after Hegel?
I know, Karl Marx. You've taught me well.
There you go. Yeah, and so here's Karl Marx, and he has this idea. And the idea of the French violent revolution, Hegel polishes it up and turns it into a triangle. And one corner is a thesis. The opposite corner is an antithesis or antithesis. The top corner is a synthesis. Sounds complicated, but it's not. You start off with the status quo. You create a problem that's real bad, and everybody's happy to settle for your answer that's half as bad. So Karl Marx took this and says, how do you create a problem that's real bad? You send in agitators, agent provocateurs, community organizers, labor organizers. Their job is to find people with grievances, stir them up to riot. And then when there's insecurity, everyone panics and gives up their freedom to a dictator, governor, or mayor who promises to restore order. But when the dust settles, it's now a totalitarian situation. Now, let's fast forward to America. You have in the 1890s, Eugene Debs, and there's a Pullman Railroad Car Company, and it's really nice. It has a little village where they live, a little shopping stores, and then where they work. All's fine until there's an economic crisis, and the orders for railroad cars go down, and Eugene Debs comes over, and what does he do? He finds people with grievances, and he stirs them up to riot. they rioted and destroyed $80 million worth of railroad cars in 27 different states. So much so that the president, Grover Cleveland, had to send in the U.S. Army to restore order. Well, Debs is put in jail, then he gets out and he forms the Socialist Party of America. He runs for president five times between 1900 and 1920. And then out of the Socialist Party is, in 1920, is formed the Communist Party USA, which runs a candidate for president every year from 1920 to 1940. And then when Franklin Roosevelt makes a treaty with Stalin during World War II, the Communist Party USA says, why should we run another candidate? Let's just support the Democrats, which they have ever since.
Wow.
Now we've gone from Debs to Germany, 1930. Germany was a republic, the Weimar Republic, and Hitler works his way up in politics, and he's voted in as chancellor, which is like their president, by one vote. It's a very, very close election. And then he has a violent group called the Brown Shirts. They're like Antifa, BLM, and they're nicknamed stormtroopers because they would storm into the meetings of Hitler's political opponents and disrupt them and shout down the leaders. And they were led by Ernst Röhm, a radical homosexual. And then they would lock arms and block access to buildings. And then they would lock arms and block streets. Could you imagine people locking arms and blocking streets? And then they would go down into the city and smash windows and set buildings on fire and loot over 7,000 Jewish stores in the night of broken glass.
Wow.
And then the Capitol is set on fire. And in this national confusion, Hitler rounds up his political enemies, has them shot without a trial, and then Hitler kills the Brown Shirts in the night of the Long Knives, and everyone praises Hitler as restoring order out of this chaos, and when the dust settles, they realize they just gave up their Weimar Republic, and now they're a totalitarian dictatorship.
You know, by the way, let me just stop you real fast. I'm going to stop you real fast. By the way, we have 7 minutes left, so we're about halfway through in this interview. But so often, Hitler is presented as if he was a man on the right. That is absolutely not true. Hitler was the head of the National German Workers Socialist Party. He was a socialist. He believed in big government. And there are some means by which you could say, well, you know, he wasn't a total, you know, like a communist. In fact, he was certainly anti-communist. But he was on the totalitarian side, the pro-socialist side, as opposed to pro-free enterprise and pro-liberty side of the equation. I just want to point that out because, in effect, those people who say that they're Antifa, which means anti-fascist, in reality, they're pro-fascists. You know, they're in the same mold, as you just pointed out, as Hitler and Röhm and the Brown Shirts and so forth. And as Goebbels, their propaganda minister, said, history is made in the street. All right, go on, Bill.
Right. So Hitler was the head of the National Socialistische Arbeiterpartei, which means National Socialist Workers' Party. So Hitler was socialist with Germany as its his German support, whereas the communists wanted socialism spread around the world. So they're both socialists. One is more of a national socialist, and the other is an international socialist. So World War II ends. Germany gives up its little provinces. It had some in Africa and China. And then England gives up its provinces and kingdoms and colonies, and France gives up its colonies. And so after World War II, you have all these brand new countries coming into existence with brand new leaders. It's a wonderful world, except the Soviet Union wants to make them all satellites. And so the KGB would send their agents into Romania, Hungary, Poland, Czechoslovakia. And what would they do? They would find people with grievances. Maybe they're on the lower end of the economic spectrum. Maybe they're ethnically discriminated against, religiously discriminated against, racially discriminated against. It didn't matter. They would break them into victims and oppressors, and they would organize riots and protests and smashing windows, setting buildings on fire. Then they would co-opt the media with bribes and threats to blame the new leader for all the problems. And then they would find weak links in the military, and when the public got panicky enough, they would do a coup or a rigged election and install a Soviet puppet leader. Well, Truman does nothing. he thinks his United Nations will bring world peace. But Eisenhower is the next president. He decides to fight fire with fire. And you have Iran now has a leader siding with the Soviet Union.
Okay, we have his 4 minutes left. Yeah, 4 minutes left. And he gets replaced by the Shah, I understand?
Right. Mossadegh nationalizes the Iranian oil industry. And you say, big deal. Well, wait a second. Britain has no oil. Winston Churchill changed the British Navy from coal to oil. But so in 1908, they formed the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. You know it better as BP. And so when Mossadegh nationalizes it, Britain has virtually no oil. And so they go to Eisenhower, who has Secretary of State John Foster Dulles approve the first CIA operation to overthrow a country's leader. The agent on the ground is Kermit Roosevelt Jr., CIA agent. And he is the grandson of Teddy Roosevelt. And he does the same thing. He goes over to Tehran, recruits mobsters, gangsters, criminals, radical imams, and he stages protests and riots. And they attack mosques, and then they co-opt the media with bribes and threats to blame Mossadegh for all the problems. And then when the country is upset enough, they put Mossadegh under house arrest, lock him away for the rest of his life where he dies. And then they install the Shah, who loved America. The CIA did the same thing in Guatemala in 1954, the Congo in 1960, Dominican Republic, even Chile in 1973. Well, the KGB did the same thing. And there's pictures of Brezhnev hugging Yasser Arafat and helping him to start the PLO. And there's Brezhnev hugging Castro and taking over Cuba. And the Russians taking over countries in Latin, South America, Africa, and China doing the same in the Far East. This is called the Cold War. It's the basis of every spy novel. You go to a third world country, you run into the Russians, the KGB, you run into the CIA, and they're going to do an assassination. The only difference this time around is it's taking place on American soil.
You mean in modern America? In modern America. In other words, you're saying that somebody like AOC is a part of an attempt to take over the United States of America, or at least to turn it into a socialist nation. Now, of course, she won, you know, politically, and we have 3 minutes left, but go ahead. I had 2 minutes left.
Yeah, so here we have pallets of bricks being dropped off right where they're going to have a riot. I was in Emporia, Kansas a couple months ago, and they said, yeah, somebody drops off a pallet of bricks right where they're going to have a peaceful protest, and there's no construction going on in the area. This happened all across the country. There's a tremendous amount of organization taking place, and we already know that there are people in the CIA that do not like this president. There are people in the Department of Justice and all these different federal departments that they've been trying to get rid of him through a false Russian collusion narrative. And they've been doing these exact operations in other countries for 70 years. And then we have George Soros. Now, I grew up in St. Louis, just 30 miles from Ferguson. 90% of the people rioting in Ferguson were not from Ferguson. They were brought in by MORE, M-O-R-E, Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment. By the way, all this information is in my book called Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present, and my website's AmericanMinute.com. So MORE gets $30 million from George Soros, and they bring the people into an inner-city church and train them how to riot, how to lock arms and block streets. And
a minute
even
left.
Even how to give emotional speeches in front of a camera with a tear. And then afterwards, they weren't paid right away, so they took over the MORE headquarters, started a hashtag cut the check campaign. But it was a rent-a-mob that they moved to Milwaukee, Baltimore, and Charlotte. So we're seeing something take place on our soil that is orchestrated. And I guess I'm out of time. But AmericanMinute.com is my website, and the new book is called Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present.
All right, so we have half a minute left to go. So is socialism a real threat in modern America?
It is. And their tactics, the subtitle is How the Deep State Uses Crisis to Consolidate Control. So you have the response to the COVID is what? Let criminals out of jail. Okay. And then crime goes up and people leave. Well, who leaves? Maybe those with families. Those tend to be more pro-family. Those are Republicans. Well, who's left? Maybe more people dependent on government entitlements. Well, those tend to be more Democrats. So crime goes up. Republicans leave. Democrats get a monopoly on city politics. Right? And then businesses shut down and churches are shut down. Well, those are where social conservatives and pro-business people, those usually belong to, you know, the Republican Party.
Yeah, we're basically out of time, but all this can be found in your new book, Socialism. Bill Federer has been our guest, AmericanMinute.com for more information. Thank you, Bill. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Jerry.